Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. As New York City reopens, live music is making its way back to stages. And one pro who will be performing tomorrow is the one and only Judy Collins. She'll be at City Winery's new location over on 11th Avenue. Collins' tour will take her on to New Jersey, Long Island, and then across the country. Judy Collins typically performs more than 100 concerts a year. And she's a prolific writer with no fewer than 7 books to her name, all while continuing to be a strong voice in social activism. Judy Collins was my guest in 2019, and we discussed her most recent project, Winter Stories. And I started by asking Judy to describe her collaborators on this project.
It's a project I've been working on with a group called the Chatham County Line. They're a wonderful bluegrass group, and they've recorded with Steve Martin and done all kinds of touring. They're just marvelous. And also an artist from Norway named Jonas Fjeld, and he and I have known each other. I've actually recorded with him before. He has had big hits in his career, and so we've done some of his songs, some of my songs. We're doing The Blizzard, of course, which some of my fans will know, had a premiere in 1989, I think, on Sony, and then they dropped the album, so people didn't hear much of it. But I do it in concerts always, and even though people don't scream and yell at the start, they scream and yell at the end, so that's always good.
You've been politically active your entire career.
Yes.
Is that something that was with you since you were a young girl, or did you have an awakening?
Well, I grew up on the radio with my father, because my father had a radio show, which I was on many times, singing with him, talking with him. And he was really very outspoken about everything. He did not hesitate to talk about the Vietnam War. He did not hesitate to talk about why are we going. The French just lost at Dien Bien Phu. In fact, we had a cat named Dien Bien Phu, and he even brought his politics home. And he would talk about McCarthy, and he would talk about very dangerous things to talk about on the radio in 1949, 50, 55. Some people Henry Falk Jr. in Texas were thrown off the radio for speaking in this way. Mm-hmm. But of course, he was a great musician, a great singer. People adored him. And so I grew up knowing from him that you have to talk about it, you have to learn about it, and you have to be an activist. And I want to just mention that my most recent release is called Dreamers, and it's out there now, and it's a song about immigration. I was just up at Chautauqua up above Buffalo, and the woman who runs that wonderful place has a daughter who's 13, and she said her daughter loves Dreamers and plays it and played it for her schoolmates, and now they're all singing it in school, which makes me very happy. But she also said to her mother, Miss Collins is 80. By the way, I drop the 0 and keep the 8 because it's the sign for infinity. And she said, Miss Collins is 80 and she's still an activist, and that impresses me. So I was impressed that a 13-year-old got it.
Well, you know what? Let's listen to a little bit of Dreamers. Oh. You wrote this from the perspective of a woman named Maria, a Dreamer's mother. So let's take a listen.
This land was made by dreamers and children of those dreamers. We came here for democracy and hope. Now all we have is hope. My husband is a good man. He is no raping criminal. His hands are rough and scarred now from digging in the earth. My daughter loves her father, and he was always gentle. He too came from Jalisco to find what freedom's worth.
That's the voice of the great Judy Collins, who is my guest. How is creating art and music an act of resistance.
It's so important because, in part, because it breaks the taboo. There's so many things that were taboo. You know, I grew up in a family of very, let's say, immature or naive alcoholics. And what happened in our home was dangerous, because if you have an active alcoholic in the house, it's dangerous. And by the time I was 19, I knew that I, too, was an alcoholic. But it's something we never talked about. And as soon as I started writing books, I started writing about the secrets in our family. And then, of course, it went on to other things. But I think talking about it and opening up the issue so that we're not afraid to say, yeah, I'm in recovery. You know, I'm now sober 41 years. That's a miracle, because many people aren't, and because many people are still bemused by the subject of addiction. And we can tell that because a lot of people are dying from overdoses. So many people, including Big Pharma, are very puzzled about addiction. And I don't believe it can be cured by pills. Forgive me for the soapbox.
I asked. I opened the door.
So talking and getting it out there in the public is very important. I was 14 when I tried to kill myself. So talking about suicide was something I had to do when I got into therapy early here when I moved to New York. It was 1963, and I was in therapy because of my depression. And I'm lucky that I did not see psychiatrists, because I'd have been put on drugs and I would not be here speaking with you today, I can promise you.
Your most recent book in 2017, you brought this up, was called Cravings, about your struggles with compulsive eating and eating disorders. And there's one reviewer put it, and it was a regular person reviewer, not a professional reviewer, said, "I appreciate this book's unblinking and honest portrayal of the nightmare life of a person afflicted with eating disorders and alcoholism."
Yeah.
Why did you write the book at that point in your life? This was just 2 years ago. And what were you doing, and where were you when you were able to get a handle on these addictions?
I'm very fortunate that when I was 38, I was intervened by a doctor who sent me to treatment. So I got sober in 1938. I mean, 19.
When you were 38.
I think. And so I was able to discover what the solution is, which is 12-step programs. I believe completely in the 12 steps. I don't hesitate to talk about it. I know we have a tradition of anonymity, but I think that means within our... I met a woman who does a lot of fundraising for sober schools where people can go to school and stay in a sober. I said, what's the difference between us and them? She said, well, they're young and they don't believe in anonymity. They think that it's the only solution and they have to hold on to it for dear life, and they have to talk about it. They have to talk about it to their school friends. They have to get the message out. I feel strongly about that after 41 years. Hmm. And because I was in the 12-step programs, naturally the food came next. And the struggle was somewhat easier than it might have been otherwise. I think much easier than it would have been otherwise. And I wrote the book Cravings in order to say there is a solution. The other link is that all of those foods that we're allergic to, sugar, grains, flour, corn, and wheat, they're all in alcohol. So all of the things you would like to, everybody starts with sugar. When I was a little girl, I was eating sugar like a son of a gun, you know, and wherever and however I could get it. I mean, look, girls can have fun. 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds can have a lot of fun with sugar. I can prove it. So most of us start with that, and the sugar path, and everybody knows, you know, you shouldn't eat gluten and you shouldn't eat things that have sugar in them. Now everything has sugar in it. So that's why I wrote the book. Because people never talk about this is what causes your compulsion. And I wrote it because I was flying. I do fly 120 or so shows, so I'm everywhere all the time in airports. And the overweight issue, the morbid obesity, I would watch people come off planes in groups of which 30-40% of the people were way overweight. So it's not just a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's a massive, it's like the opiate addiction, the opioid problem. We have an addiction to these things, and the pills, of course, the opioids, we're of course allergic to those naturally because they'll kill us if we have too many.
My guest is Judy Collins. You mentioned the amount of days that you are on the road. That's extraordinary. How do you take care of yourself physically? How do you take care of your voice?
Well, I was lucky because I was with a teacher who was a miracle worker, a man named Max Margulies. I met him in 1965 because I was having trouble singing, and I really needed to get together with somebody. And I asked a couple of people that I knew, a couple of people who ran an arts camp in Lenox, Massachusetts, and the Baumans, and then I asked Harry Belafonte's pianist, who gave me both the same name and the same phone number. And when I moved up to the West Side from the Village, I finally was desperate enough to call him. And I called him and I said, "Would you help me?" And he said, "Who are you? What do you want? How can I, you know, who recommended you?" And then he asked me what I did, and I told him, and he said, "I'm not interested." He said, "You people are not serious." I said, "I'm very serious. I need you. You're the only person that was recommended to me." And he said, "Oh, okay, well, all right, you could come by." And I said, "Where do you live?" So he told me, and I walked out my front door on the 8th floor, walked across the elevator, and rang his bell.
Oh, that's... What a good story.
And 32 years later, when he died, I had studied with him for all those years, and he said, "Don't worry. It's just about clarity and phrasing. You have to only remember that." And, I mean, I would be gone if I had continued to drink, obviously, unless I had been lifted out of this terror and horror that I was in. But I did get sober, so I could take advantage of all that training. And I eat well. I don't scream. I don't yell. I don't drink. I don't smoke. And I have a wonderful team of people who help me. And that's enormously important. I have certainly learned how to accept help, and I need a lot.
Before I let you go, do you mind if I ask you about Sweet Judy Blue Eyes?
Not at all.
Love this story. Love the song, written by your former boyfriend, Stephen Stills. Still one of the greatest songs of all time. And you went out and you released the record together. You went on tour together. And I understand that your husband, he appreciates the musical part of this song, but maybe not the sentiment. Is that true?
You know, he was a little nervous about Stephen. Stephen and I met in 68 and made a record that I was making for Elektra and had a love affair. And then he wrote Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And then we parted, but amicably, so that we stayed friends all those years. And then when we decided to go out together and do this, which was remarkable, we did 115 shows in a year and a half. And I think, I mean, Stephen and my husband are friends. You know, they talk, they laugh, they get along. That's the good news.
My guest has been Judy Collins. It has been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Do you mind if we play a little Sweet Judy Blue Eyes
on
the way
I'd
out?
I'd love to hear it.
All right. This is all of it.
It's getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore. I am sorry. Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud. I am lonely. I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are. Give back it hard. Remember what we've said and done and felt about each other. Please have mercy. Don't let the past remind us of what we are not.
That was my conversation with Judy Collins, who will be playing at City Winery tomorrow night as part of her current national tour.